Hello and good afternoon. I'm Beth Ann Stevie. I am the Senior Content Marketing Manager for LTET, and I am joined today by Michael Lowe. Today we'll be discussing developing, launching, and growing non-legal market offerings. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, Beth Ann. Happy to be here.
I'm thoroughly excited by your article, and I was wondering, just from an opening perspective, how did you get into technology?
Well, actually, my background is not in technology, but in business strategy. I started in consulting out of business school. I got my MBA at Duke University, and I spent 12 years with Accenture in their strategy practice. When I started a law firm practice about 9 years ago, I quickly learned that innovation typically was run out of the CIO's shop. So it was IT that was expected to do innovation, even if that innovation had a lot of non-technology components. So that's where I gravitated. I see my feeling of technology is I see it as definitely a means to an end, and just a part, albeit an important part, of the overall solution that has to include strategy, policy, process, people. But technology is in law firms, I think that's where everyone looks when they want to see innovation. And so that's where I found most of interest in my work.
Well, it's a really interesting kind of second career idea. A lot of the article that you've written for the full issue really does take the tech out of tech and give it a broader swath. I think it will be incredibly appealing to our readers who are really looking for some parts of their work to do something that encompasses all of the market offering around them that they're seeing at small boutique firms and then at the larger firms.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think that it points to some of the lessons that I've derived from delivering these market offerings that are non-legal. The lessons apply not just to that, but apply to any innovative projects that IT is asked to deliver to their firms. And a principle of which is that your change and your innovation may be technology driven, but it will not succeed if you don't consider all those other aspects, like the people aspect and the policy and the process.
That's certainly true. Can you define for our listeners what exactly is a non-legal marketing offer?
Sure. Non-legal market offering is a service provided by the firm that complements their legal services, but does not have to be provided by lawyers. So clients frequently require services that include more than just legal services. And offering legal and non-legal services together enables the firm to really meet the client needs. And what I was calling in the article, maximize their share of wallet of the client. So rather than have the client spend money with the law firm plus additional consulting firms, provide all of those services by the law firm to not only get more revenue, but actually have more control over the quality of the solution.
That seems like you're going to be able to offer not only the market and the user, but the business a much more practical offering. Can you talk a little bit about any of the practical applications for these offerings and how legal tech as an industry can benefit heavily from them?
Yeah, so there's really a wide array of services that can complement the firm's legal services. And so one of the challenges for law firms is to identify which are the ones that matter most to them. But in terms of applications, for example, in DC, for a long time, firms have offered public affairs or lobbying as a non-legal service, but it's a really logical fit because a lot of times that doesn't have to be delivered by a lawyer, but it could be. It's only recently that firms are branching out into other services. And some examples are strategic communications, financial regulatory consulting, healthcare policy analysis, HR compliance. In almost every area of your customer's business, there's a complementary offering that goes along with the legal services you're providing. And also, I would say every one of those has a role for technology. Some of them have technology as the centerpiece, like a cyber risk service offering or an e-discovery solution. And for others, the technology part is just a complementary piece.
I think that's incredibly interesting because the practical applications are going to be so much larger than what people typically will apply them to.
Yes. I mean, as in all business, it's about making choices. And I think law firms, there are a lot of opportunities because there are a lot of practical applications. So the questions are, which ones do you pursue? Which ones complement your legal offerings? Which ones share a buyer so that, or have at least buyers who are in contact with each other? Because if you have a great relationship with the chief legal officer at a company and your new offering has to do with the chief marketing officer, that may not be that easy of a pitch. But
yeah, I don't want to have to be in the room for that one.
Right. So you have to find those opportunities that are complementary, both from a sales perspective, because you can be selling to one person, but also from a delivery perspective, because the subject matter can be shared between, and the expertise around this problem can be shared between your lawyers and your, let's say, consultants. And also, in terms of the choices you have to make is, can you select some non-legal offerings that complement each other such that you can share staff or share space or share technology?
Non-wasted resources certainly a big place in the market right now, trying to have people not only handle multiple areas, but multiple kind of case audiences as well.
Yeah. And I mean, if you build, which I've seen firms do, if they build these non-legal market offerings in silos, you miss out on the opportunity.
Certainly true. Considering everything that you've seen on the non-legal side lately, there have been many, many recent hacks, disruptions that have raised concerns about security, privacy. How can services in the non-legal market come into play there?
Well, this is a good example of where non-legal services are offered in concert with legal services to really completely solve a client's problem. I mean, law firms can be the first professional services firm brought into a company that has experienced some kind of security breach. Right? So, and because the first thing maybe they're thinking of is their legal exposure. So let's get our lawyers in here. But that quickly can turn to other aspects of their problem. What technical forensics do they do to understand the full scope of the breach? How do they harden their networks to prevent future disruptions? What training should they do to reduce the risk that a future attack would be successful? What should they communicate to customers and shareholders and the media? So all those questions have to be answered by someone, and you might as well be the law firm rather than send those clients out to other professional services firms.
You mentioned a better blueprint. What does that better blueprint look like?
Well, yeah, when I talk about a blueprint, I mean, for me, this gets into what does a solution look like when you are building a business, which really is what this is? What are the elements of the business that have to be designed and deployed when you launch an offering? And I think one of the things that firms do insufficiently is think holistically through all of the elements of business launch. And it's not just a business launch like a standalone startup, because in addition to launching it, you have to embed it in your firm. You have to think, for example, about conflicts or diluting your brand of the larger firm, or how to attract talent to a firm where maybe they're going to feel like second class citizens. So you have to think about creating this business, but also creating it within the larger context of the firm. And that's where I think a blueprint is necessary. A blueprint is the thing that guides all the decisions that you need to make, whether it's about your organizational structure, whether it's about how you're in a market, what you're going to measure, what technology you need, your facilities, where people are going to sit. If you've thought through all those things and you've aligned all those things to your vision, then you're going to have a successful offering. When you neglect those things, a lot of times that's where firms run into trouble.
I think that's completely true. I think the unpreparedness aspect is always going to be a problem.
Yeah, you know, and I think people, I see this a lot of times in changes at law firms. Like you want it to be easy, and you want to sort of pick one or two changes and hope that that's all you need to do. But it's hard work. Launching a new business is hard work, and it takes a certain degree of planning and preparation.
And a certain degree of being willing to understand that nothing's going to go to plan.
True. And in that regard, you know, it's really important to have the right structure within your firm as you launch these. So do you have an executive committee of firm leaders with whom you are communicating, who are helping you to clear roadblocks, who really understand the vision? And then when things don't go perfectly, they don't immediately pull the plug because they know why you're doing what you're doing. They may even be understanding of why you're not profitable right away, because you're heading towards a vision that they have bought into. I mean, you really need that, because you're going to require investment from firm leadership. You know, not just, you know, you're not just monetary investment, although that's part of it, but also you need them to help pitch your offering to the rest of the firm. The rest of the firm, the partners of the firm, are an amazing army of salespeople, but only if they believe in what you're doing, they know and they understand what you're doing, and they're able to able and willing to identify in their clients a need that your offering can support.
What would you tell an introductory class of 100, 200 level students who thought that they wanted to not only be lawyers, but maybe strategists for, you know, a market position? Would you tell them that they have these five things to do? And if so, what would those five things be?
So I guess I would say, number one, choose offer. So I think it starts with choosing the right offerings, right? Pursuing the right ones, and then pursuing them in the right way. So in terms of pursuing the right ones, I'd say, number one, choose offerings that together with your legal services solve a client's problem. Like, let's not think about how do we solve our clients' legal problems? Let's think about how we solve our clients' problems. And some problems are bigger and more complex than others. And if we can come up with offerings that combined with legal services really meet your client need, then I think that's incredibly attractive. So that's one. Two, I would say, choose offerings where your partners have access to the right decision makers at the client, and where your firm's involvement allows you to charge a premium. So you want to be able to sell that offering. So part of that is having access to the buyer. And the other part is being at a price point that the buyer will accept. And that means probably in law firms who have high overheads, probably you need to be able to, you need and you want to be able to charge a premium because your law firm is because it's being offered by your firm. Three, I would say, is about vision. So this gets into, you know, how are you developing the offering? And I think it starts with a vision. Start with a sufficiently bold vision for what your offering will look like in 3 years or 5 years, and make sure that your decisions align with that vision. It's too often that law firms just try to get something stood up to last for 3 months, and those typically don't endure.
There's that Ozymandias idea that everything's going to crumble around you. You've got to build for the long haul.
Yes. And it really affects decisions about how you source the services. You know, do you hire people? Do you team with a provider for whom you refer and get referral bonuses? Do you co-brand with someone? Those decisions should be made with, you know, a few years in mind, not just the next sale. I would say number four, I think I'm on four. Make sure that partners.
Definitely on four.
Okay, good. Make sure the partners are willing and able to sell your services. As I mentioned, that they are your salespeople. They don't necessarily like to think of themselves that way, but that's what they are, and they can be a great asset, but only if they're able to pitch your services or to know to bring you in to make the pitch. And then the last thing I would say is, you know, you have to do the hard work of building and enforcing the processes and the methodologies that allow you to sell and deliver these services efficiently, predictably, repeatably. So I think that traditionally there's sort of a law firms over years historically have built sort of bad project management practices for their legal matters. And you don't want to start that off with your non-legal matters. There's too much competition from those who deliver projects the right way and different client expectations. So make sure that when you launch this non-legal offering, that it's done the right way with project management, with processes, with methodology, so that you can really deliver it efficiently.
I think people are looking for the idea that, you know, it's going to come simply out of a box, that they can download an application or program and run it successfully. And that's simply not the case. You've demonstrated, you know, multiple ways that there's added value if there is greater buy-in.
Yeah. And, you know, this question of like, can it be out of the box is a good one. I think that what you find is that the methodology and the blueprint for creating a non-legal offering is kind of out of the box. And the more firms do it, the better they'll get at it. So that approach can be relatively standard. What's different about each one are the many decisions you make to have your offering aligned with your vision and with your marketplace and with the culture of your firm. So, you know, an offering that's not compatible with the firm's brand or with the firm's culture, you know, won't last long and you won't be able to keep your people. But if you make the decisions that set up your offering to be congruent with the way your firm works, and also, of course, with the needs and the buyer values of your client, and positions you favorably relative to your competition, then you're going to be successful. So there are a lot of decisions to be made, but the process you follow, I think, can be consistent for every non-legal offering that you develop.
How would you then position your clients to measure that success?
That is a good question. So, because I think measuring success, the measurement part kind of gets insufficient attention, even though it's critical. Everyone, once they launch, they like take a deep breath and they say, okay, we're done. But the preparing your offering to be measured and actually doing the measuring is really big. So a few thoughts on that. I'd say, first of all, part of defining the vision, which I've talked about, is defining what success looks like. Success doesn't necessarily mean profit. In the business world, some offerings are loss leaders for other offerings. You know, movie theaters don't make money off the movie, right? They make money off the popcorn. So it's not unreasonable for your vision to be, you know, we're not going to be super profitable, but we're going to generate a lot of add-on legal work. So understanding what is the business objective for this offering is the place to start. And then what I like to do working with clients is develop a balanced set of metrics that are appropriate for a startup. So by balanced, I mean not just financial metrics, but metrics for your marketing, for your talent acquisition, for your service development. Because a lot of startups don't make money in their first year. And if that's your metric, you know, you may have a tough story to tell to your firm's leadership committee if you don't make money in the first year. So it's important to define with your sponsors and firm leadership, like, what is a successful first year look like, and then drive toward those goals. For example, you know, an example would be you could have an opportunity to keep your team occupied on a single client, on a single project, and have a profitable first year. But strategically, it might be wiser to serve a broader base of clients, take on smaller projects, but have a larger portfolio of services that you're able to develop. And even if that generates lower profits or no profits. So having a balanced set of metrics and driving toward those metrics, I think it's really important for the future years of your offering, and also convincing your firm leadership that you're on the right track.
You're basically asking to disrupt the current status quo, the current game plan. You're suggesting that disruption and a better project plan, a better thought process holistically is the way to go. Do you think that this is the dawn of the new day? Is this the brave new world?
Well, I think that it is a brave new world in the sense that the traditional model has to be questioned. And I know firms are questioning the traditional model in terms of how they offer legal services, and they're being forced to by outside competition. And that's particular, but that process is slow. I mean, they're questioning the model and they're thinking about how they can deliver legal services in more innovative ways and maybe pricing things differently. But that process has been, in my opinion, you know, slow and frustrating. And I would say when it comes to non-legal offerings, it has to be even faster. Like you are now competing not against other law firms, but against professional services firms who have been innovating for years now. And if you're going to compete, you know, you have to be, if not on par with them, yeah, at least you have to be close behind them.
Certainly. I think that question of innovation and how much farther innovation can go is certainly at the forefront of everything ILTA is doing right now. If innovation is the current, you know, buzzword and disruption is there and the idea that changes are quickly occurring, what's next?
Well, I think so. It's a good question. I mean, if I think about it, and I'm not like a technologist, so I think of it in terms of the business side rather than the technology side. But if I think about what's next for innovation, I think that it's going to be about data and how firms use, you know, think about the collection and the analysis and the application of data. You know, one of the good things about working with law firms is you don't actually have to be prescient to know what the next big things are going to be, because you probably can look out at the rest of the marketplace who's really typically out in front of law firms. And I think, you know, clearly for them, that's been the case. It's been about the application and use of data. Over the last several years, firms have made a lot of strides in improving the quality and the consistency of the data they collect. And the next step is, you know, putting in the commitment to analyzing that data and putting that data to work. And it doesn't have to be futuristic stuff. There's a lot of value in the basic stuff. You're using data to measure profitability, to improve pricing, to better manage schedules and budgets, to segment customers, to allocate resources, all those things that firms probably already have the data to do, but it's now about committing the time and the resources to analyzing the data and using that data to drive decision-making.
I've always thought that data has to be such a huge part of the innovation movement, because without it, you can't innovate anything.
Yes, and the first step was getting data that of decent quality. And I think a lot of law firms have made strides in that area. And now it's a question of, okay, what do you do with it?
What about you? What are you going to do next?
Well, that's a good question. I'm always looking I'm looking for the next trend, and particularly those where I think that my skill set can be of value. And because if you find that trend, you know, law firms tend to fly in flocks, you know, they like to do what the others are doing. So if you can identify those trends, there's opportunities to do interesting work across multiple engagements. I think that the non-legal service development is a great example, because since I have an MBA and I know the startup world and the legal world, I feel like I'm well suited to help firms to make the most of their opportunities to develop these services. And it's what's interesting, I like to be on new learning curves. And so what's nice about these market offerings is, even though the blueprint and the methodology might be the same, every offering is different. So I'm learning about, you know, one engagement I'm learning about financial regulation, and another one I'm learning about the automotive industry, another I'm learning about cybersecurity. So it provides opportunities to learn the subject of each of these offerings. So I'm excited about that.
When you figure out what the next cool trend is in technology, legal technology, or any market offerings, let us know.
Yes, you'll be the first to receive a call.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Michael.
We're still using phones. Yeah, thank you, Bethann. It's great to talk to you.
Awesome.
You've been listening to ILTA Radio. Subscribe to ILTA's podcasts through iTunes or Podbean and get alerted about new recordings. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.